Hey folks, this is Erin. I just wanted to give you all a heads up that the Deck Tease is going to be going on a brief hiatus for the next month while I work on a side project podcast called The Girlfriend Bracket, featuring me and three of my very best girlfriends while we talk about all things related to Magic the Gathering. So please enjoy this episode and keep your eye on Gathering Magic for future episodes of The Girlfriend Bracket and for the Deck Tease. Welcome to episode 125 of the Deck Tease Podcast. I am your host, Erin Campbell. My guest tonight is a game store owner, a tournament organizer, who is also responsible for the upcoming Eternal Extravaganza coming up in March. He is Michael Caffrey. Hello.
Hi, Erin.
Hi. Thank you so much for joining me tonight.
It's great to be on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for doing this. As I mentioned before when we were talking, my friend and who I like to say my PR person, my fan club president, Kate Klinghammer, recommended you to come on the show because she's been to several of your events and she happens to know you and your wife and she thought you were good people. And I am attending one of your events next month, the Eternal Extravaganza. And yes, I'm going to say it like that every time I say it. And so I wanted you on the show to talk about the event and a little bit about yourself. So thank you for agreeing to do this.
I'm glad to be here.
Cool. So let's go ahead and get started because I was blown away by what I found out about you because it all seems to have happened so fast. So you opened a game store, Tales of Adventure, and you were only 23 when you did that. Am I right?
Yeah, that sounds like the math.
Okay, now when I was 23, I was unemployed, eating a lot of Sonic and watching the Golden Girls. So clearly I was doing something wrong. So how did this happen? How did you open a store at 23 years old?
It spirals from a couple different factors. And the tail end of 2012, I had graduated from Lehigh University with a BS in computer science.
Okay.
And I applied for a couple jobs, looked around, didn't really get any offers, didn't really find anything that I was excited about doing, wanted to do. At the time, I was working for another game store for about 3 years. I had left that position on pretty good terms with them over the summer. And in 2 months, my then-girlfriend, now wife, said, hey, there's this space in town. It's pretty big. It's for rent. No one's been in there for a while. Why don't we make something of it?
Okay. And was there any hesitation? Like, we can't open a game store, or were you just completely in?
It was a little bit of a decision, but throughout college, I was buying and selling cards on the side, had amassed quite the collection, tons of foils, about 100 duels or so. So before we opened, once it was committed, I made the drive out to Grand Prix Detroit in September or so, walked up to one of my dealer friends, said, hey, I'm doing this. I need a boatload of cash, and just plopped down stacks of cards.
Nice. How long had you been playing Magic for? When did you start?
I started briefly back in 2003, which would have been mirrored and blocked into Champions of Kamigawa. Champions of Kamigawa was the first booster box I opened. Mm-hmm. I was very surprised that Cranial Extraction was the $20 rare I pulled. And not any of the awesome ninjas or anything else in there.
Yeah.
My first deck was a soldier-based deck with four Sword of Fire and Ice and four Sword of Light and Shadow. I paid about $4 a piece on both of those. Ooh. From a site that I think is no longer in business. then kind of mothballed everything. And when I got back into things, when I went to Lehigh in 2008, I pulled out my old cards and we started drafting as a college club in the Shards of Alara block. Mm-hmm. And things kind of just continued. I had a couple different friends say, hey, I used to play. I'm not playing anymore. Here's my collection. The first collection I bought, I paid way too much money on. The best cards were like four Birds of Paradise and four Wrath of God. Mm-hmm. But started to learn and did something with it.
It's interesting that you started playing the game at a time when a lot of people stopped playing the game. Because from what I understand, I was taking a break during that time as well. But from what I understand, Mirrodin and Kamigawa were sort of dark days. So it's interesting that you came when everybody else was on their way out. That's cool. So is Magic the
Yeah, I
only
didn't really
thing?
get to play too much back then. I didn't really play too much back then. A couple of events, maybe one FNM. I think we tried to go to an FNM. We didn't do a pre-release or drive down to Philly or anything like that. I remember the one time we were playing Two-Headed Giant, and the person next to me was playing this kind of red-green prison deck because Mirrodin was very artifact focused. So I was playing my deck with like 16 sword effects and locks and punishers is the only way to kill people. And he was playing Damping Matrix and about 12 different artifact removal spells. Those decks did not go very well together.
I have a great appreciation for Damping Matrix as a Living End player, as we like to put that in our sideboard to deal with certain cards. And it just sounded like an interesting time to be playing. I kind of wish I didn't take a break at that time. So is Magic the only hobby, the only nerdy hobby that you're into? Like, are you into comics or clicks or anything like that?
Magic is by and large all I'm doing right now. Unfortunately, in the past 2 years since I've had the store, 15 months, I haven't really been able to do too many other things. I just finally broke down and bought an Xbox 360 for myself as a Black Friday deal 3 months ago, and played a couple games of Halo a night when it's available. But oftentimes I'm at the store way too late and can't really jump on there and do too much.
Now, you started a blog shortly after you decided to open the store, and you charted your progress as you went from deciding you were going to open a store to finding the space, painting, and everything like that. Walk me through how this all went down, because it seemed like a lot of work. I mean, you covered everything.
And the blog was just some way of generating excitement, generating some fairly easy content, and also just getting a bunch of pictures out there. We had the Facebook page as the primary mode of communicating what else was going on to everyone. The blog gave us a lot more depth in terms of specific product avenues, more pictures of the store, and kind of a getting people in the store before they drove down and stopped in the store itself.
What were some of the challenges that you faced with getting the store up and running? Because it does seem like people really banded together. You had the painter who showed up and helped, and you had the Blockbuster that closed that you were able to get the shelves really cheap from. It sounds like it went fairly smooth. Like, is that wrong?
That's more or less right. I've been in the industry for 4 or 5 years. I've been talking to people for about that long. I posted on Facebook, hey, saying, hey, this is a thing that's going to be happening. And we kind of just cobbled together a whole bunch of different things from a whole bunch of different sources. Basically, everything in the store at that point was secondhand. The display cases came out of a closed store in the Stroudsburg area that had been closed for a couple of years. And someone was like, hey, I have these cases. The paint and whatnot was just a friend of Rachel's, and it kind of all came together. Unfortunately, in the 15 months between then and now, we have about three times as many showcases. Moved the store next door into a much larger space, keeping the original space. So we've had to repaint a bunch, move a bunch of stuff around, but it all end of the day worked out.
Were you surprised that the store took off like that, or did you think it was just going to stay, a small little business and you would do just enough to get by?
My game plan was never to own a small store. I always wanted to be someone on the map at a big size because, really, with my degree, my life experience, whatnot, we needed to be hitting certain sales targets, be at a certain level before or within the first year. Otherwise, we would have just packed up and went home.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know we're about to talk. One of the things I want to ask you about is the growth in attendance at events, and it's interesting when I hear certain TOs say, we liked the smaller events better. We liked being a smaller TO better. It's interesting that people aren't aiming higher, and I really like that you are ambitious like that. That's great.
One of the big things I see in general is how significant economy of scale is throughout the world, but also in this industry. Running an event for 80 to 100 people isn't all that much more work or more labor than a 40 or 50 person event. You know, I still have to bring in someone to buy for the day. I have to bring in two judges at an event anywhere in that range. So at the larger event, you have more prizes and more people in the door and you're making more money, but it's not all that much more work.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you like going to the major events? Because being a store, I would imagine that you're, you know, maybe you're sending people to be vendors at a GP. Do you enjoy that part of it, or do you like just staying in your local store?
I travel more than they should, for sure. In the past 4 years or so, since I got back into the game, well, 6 years at this point, but the 4 years between opening the store and when I got back into the game, I judged somewhere around 22 Grand Prix all over the United States and four in Canada, mostly Toronto,
wow.
One in Quebec. And then I flew out to Denver to play, flew to GP Salt Lake City, GP Miami hosted by Star City, as well as the as GP Kansas City. So there's definitely been some road trips and some experiences. Right now I'm on the road probably about once every other week, and I hope to turn that basically into once a week or every weekend going forward, except when there's big event going on here.
Wow. So you run the store and you're a TO and you judge? Like you do all of that? Do you also play as well?
I do not play. That's
okay.
That's one trade off.
Okay.
I can play. I'm the eighth man for a draft occasionally, but it's not where I want to be at this point.
Okay, because I was going to say, that's a lot to do. Like, how do you keep it all going?
So I've really been able to put together a good chunk of staff and a couple key people in key areas that give me a little bit of flexibility, and in turn, I can give them a little flexibility.
So you've gotten really good at delegating, it sounds like.
It's something I'm working on.
Yeah?
But I'm better at that than I've been in the past.
Mm-hmm. Are you the type of person that has a hard time delegating because you think that you're the only one that can do it right? You know what I mean?
In some ways, I know oftentimes, I'll be able to do it the way I want it to be done. I can oftentimes do it faster, but at the end of the day, I can't be everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to pick and choose my battles of what I do myself and what I let other people shoulder the burden of.
Yeah, absolutely. So what were some of the hurdles or the obstacles that you faced opening the store? Because, again, it seems like it all went really well. Like, did anything come up that you had to overcome?
Getting inventory and getting distributor accounts was a little bit of a struggle. Part of my experience has been in the secondhand collectibles market, things like toys or statues, action figures, even comic books. And it was a little bit of a challenge getting any sort of significant quantity of these sort of things. But yet again, that was one of those things that fell into place. I talked with another store in the area, and he was helpful and sold us a couple boxes of comics. And then I got a tip from another friend of a store that had closed a couple years ago in the Wilkes-Barre area that said, "Hey, we have 40 boxes of comics. Do you want them? Here's a price."
Wow.
And we took them all, and we were building up this inventory and filling out the store. We had a very big space, about 4,500 square feet at the start of it all, and we were trying to fill that space up with something, mm-hmm. really.
Yeah. It seems like a lot more people are doing their shopping online as opposed to brick-and-mortar stores, and I've even had a couple of people on my show who run those stores or who do vend at GPs, and they say, I'm not really sure I want to build a store. Like, I'm kind of happy just having the store out of my home and things like that. Would you agree that people are leaning more towards the online, or do you think that the brick-and-mortar stores are still a thing and just as important?
The world is largely moving online, especially in this space. However, there is still a place for the game store. There's a lot of things that are a timely release or things that have an unusual size, shape, or weight. Things like fat packs, you can't really sell online profitably because of how large they are in comparison to a box and the value. So there are things that people are still going to have to walk into a local game store to buy at an attractive price. And also just having a place to meet up or having a place to come in and sell cards. We've had multiple people that have played in one of our events prior say, hey, I want to sell everything, or I'm looking for these cards, and having a place where they can openly come in without having to set up an appointment, without coming over to a house or a sketchy back alley where a GP dealer might be doing their inventory processing, definitely helps. I think the amount of trading, players selling cards for other things that happens is something that's very difficult to do online.
Mm-hmm. I think you brought up a really good point in terms of the more personal appeal as well. I know it's silly, but when I go to my local game store and I buy singles from them, I feel like I'm really doing something. And I know that sounds kind of murky, but like I feel like I'm helping somebody. I'm supporting a local business. I'm supporting somebody's family. I'm helping them, you know, earn a living. And that's not to say that the online stores don't have that as well, but I just feel better giving my money to them when I know the guy personally. I see his daughter running around the store. It just feels, I just like that feeling better, whereas I'm just sending my money to an Inc., an INC, and I don't know who they are, and there's no real, you know, connection there. And that's just how I feel. Like, I would rather give it to my local game store, but if I have to, I will certainly order online.
Right. We've positioned ourselves pretty aggressively in that space. We've relooked at how we price cards, what our benchmarks are, what the comparables are for choosing a price on an individual card. And we've definitely come down and tried to compete fairly aggressively with the online markets because we are on the road so much, we're buying so much stuff that when we come back and sell things in the store, we want to offer those people the same service and pricing that we'll do on the road to compete with other dealers at a GP.
Do you think that it's also a matter of community as well, that local game stores are sort of these hubs where people can, you know, get their first taste of a game or where they can meet other people like them? Like, do you acknowledge that your store serves a purpose like that?
I'm very happy with where our store fits in local community, getting people out, getting people playing, seeing the mother and son play at pre-release, or all of the new teenagers or younger children out at FNM. I think it's great for the game that we have those communities, but also that we're a place for those people to go in a safe and welcoming environment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And again, that's something you can't get with an internet store. You know, you can't say, oh, I'm going to go play a pre-release at tcgplayer.com. You can't really do that.
Not at all.
No. So not only do you own and operate your own store, but I understand you're also a tournament organizer. Okay. How did that get started?
Part of the initial business plan was we were going to be running large-scale events in general. We knew there was going to be a legacy crowd of some sorts in the area. We kind of looked at some of the other events going on in 2008 to 2010 or so. Jupiter Games up in Vestal, New York, ran some phenomenal events between 40 Duels. They ran a Power 9 and 40 Duels tournament several years ago. Obviously, the card prices were not quite the level they are now, but the events were always remembered very fondly. Great events to play in. I played or judged in almost every one they ran. So we saw that this was probably a successful avenue we could go in, and we decided to go for it. They, at this point, had kind of fallen off the map in that regard, just with the rising fuel prices. There's a group of players from Virginia that would drive up to New York on a regular basis, people from Boston or Syracuse. And with gas hitting $3 or $4 a gallon at that point, the travel costs were simply too high to get people back up in that area. But being down in the greater Philadelphia area, we're a three-hour drive from Baltimore, an hour and a half from New York City, and even Boston's only like a five-hour drive. So it's this very central meeting area for everyone.
Mm-hmm. You're also forgetting the big draw of Philadelphia. Isn't that Reading Terminal Market?
The market is in Philadelphia. We're about an hour outside of Philadelphia proper.
Okay.
So it's a little bit of a drive in there for those people. Running events in downtown Philly would make that a very desirable place to be, but Philadelphia is not a cheap city to do anything in.
Sure. I know I have friends in Philadelphia, and typically when I see that an event is happening there, I'm always like I remember GP Philly happened last year, and it was limited, it was sealed, and I don't go to sealed events. I'm very Kibler like that. One of my best friends lives out there, and she's like, "Hey, there's a GP out here," and I'm like, "Girl, I don't play sealed." And she was like, "Reading Terminal Market," and I'm like, "Oh, score!" And then I completely went and had a wonderful time. So it can, Magic players like to eat, so that can be a selling point.
They certainly do. We just ran StarCityGames.com regionals at the Philly Expo Center, which is the outside of Philly center where Star City ran their previous Legacy Open in Philly. And that was one of the biggest complaints is, oh, the food situation here is worse than at the convention center because there's no market down the street. So I guess that's a bigger draw than most people will give it credit for.
You brought up, criticism that sometimes you can receive as a TO, and Lord knows, we're all critics. We will judge coverage, we will judge metagames and things like that. How do you deal with that? Like, how do you determine, what criticism is valid and what might be somebody just having a bad day or looking to pick at something? Like, how do you deal with that?
Most criticism that we get back is valid on some level. Someone was discussing our food handling situation at the Philly Expo Center, asking about gloves or something of that nature, and I just figured out a solution that would work for at least for him personally at that event, because we were doing everything spur of the moment and the convention center wasn't particularly accommodating. So that was a case where we were able to jump in. Kind of addresses concerns, but Magic players in general have things they don't like and things they would like to see done better. And we take it all, just have to take it all in. Most of them have some degree of validity, though.
It's also difficult to sort of understand, who's really to, and I hate to use the word blame here, but it's like, a lot of times you will go to an event and let's say the turnover time is not very fast and people will, that's the TO's fault or that's the judge's fault or that's the birthing pod mirror's fault. And I feel like a lot of times people will voice criticism without really understanding what's behind it. Like they may lobby a complaint, but that's not the TO's fault. That's actually this person's fault. And I feel like, we don't really know what goes on behind the scenes, and that makes it a lot harder to judge what went wrong and things like that.
There's an awful lot of moving pieces involved in any tournament. There's probably about six or so different people that were all responsible for some aspect of it. But a lot of it also comes down to preventing these problems and trying to have this really great, phenomenal staff around you that are able to address these things. At the Star City Regionals event a couple of weeks ago, our entire event basically crashed when we went to pair round two. It was a known Wizards of the Reporter problem where one of the players wasn't paired in the round. He was just kind of floating, which required us to delete the results for the entire first round and manually put them back in. Mike Noss was our scorekeeper, who's been doing it for a very long time and was able to put it all back together without anyone in the hall noticing.
That's pretty nice. So a lot of attention has been placed on TOs lately with the growth of Magic the Gathering and the boost in attendance. And, TOs pulling what I like to call Taylor Swift syndrome, where they're like, I didn't think anybody would come, and people obviously are coming. And as a TO, how have you adjusted to this boom in Magic and events?
Magic players are in many ways like herding sheep, trying to get them to commit or show up to anything. We basically make good guesses and go from there. We have a range of attendances that we're expecting for Eternal Extravaganza, somewhere between 280 to 380 in terms of players, and we're able to seat and have judges for probably in the low 400s, giving us a little bit of buffer room. But at the regionals event that we just ran, Star City gave us 200 play mats as their benchmark of where they thought most of these events were likely to fall. We said, oh, it's Philadelphia, we're probably going to have 300 people. So we ordered an extra 100 play mats, expecting this is close to our attendance level. And then set up the hall for about 350 people, had plans for two judges to come on if we hit 260 and 290 players. And then all of a sudden, when round one is about to start, we just enrolled the 350th player, and now we have to go add four more tables and another 20 chairs just to give everyone a seat.
Wow.
We had pre-registration open for that event, but even as late as Thursday night, we had fewer than 100 people pre-registered, and on Friday, we just closed over 200, meaning there was 130 people that didn't realize, hey, I might want to show up to that event.
Mm-hmm. It's a, it sounds like
I'm not
a good
sure
problem.
How to fix that problem, besides knowing that that it is a problem.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like a good problem to have, though. You know, the attendance is good. You know, I think it'd be worse to have nobody show up.
And we're happy to have these player turnouts, adding a little bit of uncertainty into what that number is makes things more interesting the morning of.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you like running the smaller events, or is it like the game store where you want to go big? You enjoy the bigger events?
I really need the events to be at a certain scale. 20-person FNMs are a little bit interesting, but not really where I want to be. Granted, I'm also not a fan of the huge 2,500, 3,500, 5,500-person GPs, wherever they end up going in the near future. The events I have the most fun at are at that 500 to 1,800-person level in all aspects of the game, be it playing, judging, or organizing.
Mm-hmm. What don't you enjoy about the big, 2,500, 5K events?
At the larger scale, especially on the judge side of things, it becomes very easy to get lost in the mix, just being another number, not having a real real responsibility or feel like what you're doing is affecting the outcome of the entire event. At a small event, you might have one or two teams responsible for putting all the pairings up. At a larger event, there might be six different teams, and if you slip up and are 5 minutes late, the event's going to go on. It's not a big deal. Whereas I like the smaller events where you need to be on point, you need to be pulling your weight, and really everyone needs to be pulling their weight to have a successful event.
Sure. So one of the events that you're most well known for is Eternal Extravaganza, which I will be going to next month, and I'd never even heard of this before. I was looking for, I'm a big modern fan myself, and I was complaining to my friends how there just weren't any modern events going around, and how the PPTQs weren't modern and things like that. And my friend Matt was like, why don't you come to this event? And I had seen it, I saw the website, and I was like, I'm freaking in. So for people who don't know, what is Eternal Extravaganza, and how did it get started?
Eternal Extravaganza is the largest independent Eternal format-focused event in the U.S. Bazaar of Moxen in Europe is obviously bigger, as well as some of the Grand Prix or Eternal Weekend, which are all Wizards of the Coast-sponsored events. But we decided we wanted to do something big on our own. I had a friend in the area say, hey, I want to sell my full set of Power 9 early last year. I didn't really have the money nor the customer base to move any part of the set quickly or profitably for either of us. So instead of passing on it outright, we just decided, hey, we're going to run this event for it. We figured out some other pricing to make a smooth spread, and we decided that April 1st was a good day to announce this event to the world. Mm-hmm. That would be April Fool's Day. And the Reddit thread had some back and forth. Is this a real thing? Oh God, I hope this thing is going to happen. Which definitely gave us a nice little viral push at the start, and we ended up having 260 players last year for a Legacy Power 9 40 Duels event. And then on Sunday we ran a Vintage 2K, which had like 65 people. One of the larger proxy vintage events in the U.S. And then a 150-person StarCityGames.com Modern Premier IQ, which was also their first weekend of running their Premier IQ program, which worked out well for us there as well.
Very cool. So if I understand you correctly, you literally started this event because your friend wanted to sell some cards? Like, that was the main reason?
We wanted to give away these cards.
Okay.
And then realized that this might be a lucrative thing to be doing in the future. That being said, our first Legacy 40 Duels event, which happened in the preceding December, had 180 players at it. So it was already a pretty big event. And then some of the other 40 Duels events we ran afterwards had smaller attendances in the 100, 110, 90 sort of range. But we felt that there was definitely a large Legacy community in the area. So this was one more higher level organized play offering that we could be doing.
Mm-hmm. Now, as I mentioned, the older formats don't seem to get the same level of support that Standard tends to. You know, you see more Standard PPTQs. It does feel like there are more Standard Opens. It feels like there are more Standard GPs. It's a lot harder to find a Modern event or a Legacy event or, hell, even a Vintage event. Why do you feel that this is, and do you agree with this, like that that's a good thing to do?
I can see the appeal of Standard. I can see why stores like Standard. The average player's lifespan is only about 18 to 24 months across the whole industry. So people are playing with these cards they know, these cards they can open in booster packs. If you go into any store in the country that runs FNM, you're going to see at least half of a Standard deck, you know, one or two of most of the big rares in Standard in their cases. And you're not going to see that nearly as much with Modern cards or Legacy cards. You know, how many game stores in your local area have one Scalding Tarn, let alone four, sitting in their case? So it represents a much larger investment to players to get into these events. It's also tougher for a tournament organizer to try and run this event when you're going to say, oh, I want you to play in my event, but I don't have cards. I can't sell you anything. I can't get you on board to be able to run an event of the scale or pick up a deck for an event like this. And Legacy and Vintage, the problems are just exacerbated. Where mm-hmm. even if you're trying to buy power, trying to buy duels, the margins aren't very good, and they're just tough to find people that are looking to sell them.
Yeah.
Even for this Eternal Extravaganza 2 event coming up, where we're giving away 40 German FBBs, we've seen an incredibly small number of foreign black border duels in general, despite vending it at multiple Star City Opens or other larger events. We might have one or two come up in an individual binder. Fortunately for this event, we are employing some alternative sourcing for these cards and getting them through some connections in Europe and whatnot and on the market over there, which makes it a little bit easier. But in general, trying to find these cards isn't easy.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about the events a little more, because I'm on the website right now, and for people who don't know, like, if we had to sell them on coming here, like, what would you say to them? So if I understand this correctly, there's a Legacy and a Vintage main event, correct?
There are four different events that I would consider main events for this weekend.
Okay.
It kicks off on March 13th, where we're going to be running a draft challenge.
Okay.
Similar to the old StarCityGames.com Sunday events where they had a 64-player draft open, two tiers. And then on Saturday the 14th, we're running our Legacy main event, which has the prize pool of 40 German foreign black border dual lands.
When you say duels, you mean like Savannah, Taiga, Tundra, the big ones.
All the way up to Underground Sea.
Wow.
It's a huge prize pool, well over $10,000 in prizes at the dealer value, not even at the retail value. And then on Sunday, we have a $5,000 cash Modern event, as well as a Vintage event for a very lovely altered Black Lotus, as well as two other pieces of power. The Black Lotus was altered by Sandrine, and she's going to be making her first U.S. appearance ever at this event.
Nice. Wow. I don't think I've ever even seen a Black Lotus, much less had one in my... I mean, I've seen them online, of course, but I don't think I've ever, like, shared oxygen with a Black Lotus. Like, that's going to be awesome.
Well, if you come out to the event, we'll be sure to stage a picture with you.
Well, I am going to the event. I've already paid for my plane ticket, and I'm, you know, I've got the time off of work. I know I'm certainly going to be there. I'm, like I said, I'm going for the Modern portion. One of the downsides of Milwaukee is we really don't have anywhere to play Legacy at. We have one Legacy night on a Wednesday, but I happen to usually record on Wednesday night, so I can't make it out there. And you know, I'd like to invest in a deck, but I really wouldn't be able to practice with it. And if I can't practice, you know, I would hate to go to an open and cut my teeth at an open, you know, especially a Legacy open. Legend, where people have been playing these decks forever. So I want to get into Legacy, but I just don't really have anywhere to play it, unfortunately. So I'll just stick to Modern for now. And Vintage, I'm not even going there. That is so far out of my league, and God bless the people who play it, because I certainly can't. So.
I've played Vintage a small handful of times. It is a very difficult and mentally taxing format in many ways, but I respect anyone who's able to do well at a format like that.
I'm just so amazed at the older formats. It just the I guess what I'm looking for maybe is the swag, where it's like you see people rolling up in these big metal suitcases with their thousands of dollars worth of cards, and here I think I'm a big deal because I spent $600 on a Modern deck, and these guys are like, I spent that on one card, and like it's, you just can't help but be in awe of the whole thing, where you're like, damn, like you win. I can't even come close to that. So if you had to sell anybody on coming to EE who's listening and is, you know, maybe on the fence or doesn't know if they want to go, what would you say to people to get them to come out that you haven't already?
This is going to be a huge event. We have a catered buffet for lunch that people are able to pay for as well. We have this phenomenal lineup of prizes. We have Sandrine altering. It's really going to be a incredible experience. I'm really looking forward to being here, even just running the thing. I wish I could play in the thing. You might never play in a Legacy event at this scale again outside of a Star City Open.
Now, did I hear you right? Because like I said, I love food, Michael. Did you say a buffet?
Yes, we have an Italian deli next to the store, and they're going to be doing all of our food service for the weekend.
Wow.
We're not sure entirely what they're going to be bringing, but we figured that this is the best option for all of our players and judges throughout the weekend to have this very delicious quality food just available throughout the weekend instead of having to go to Burger King or order pizza or anything like that.
Wow, that's pretty nifty. Like, I'm loving that already. Like I said, all you have to do to sell me, Mike, is just mention food, and I'm there.
There will be food.
Then I will be there. So you've already accomplished so much these past few years. I mean, like I said, opened the store 23. You're a successful tournament organizer. Where do you see yourself going next? Like, what's in the cards for you?
The biggest challenges and opportunities that we're seeing up ahead is trying to attract the top-tier talent we need to continue growing. I've posted on Facebook a couple times that we're looking for a level 2 judge or someone of comparable experience to take over running many of these events, simply because I don't have the time to be everywhere and run point on all these things. But we need to be adding another buyer within the next 6 months. We're going to be on the road between Grand Prix or the Star City Games Open Series. One of those two is going to occupy almost every weekend. We don't know for sure if we're going to be running Star City Games regionals in the fall yet, but we're running states in a couple months at the store as well. So it's a lot of big events we're putting on, and then a lot of big events on the road that we're also doing. In the ideal world, in a couple of years, Wizards of the Coast is going to give us a phone call and say, hey, we want you to run this GP, and we'll be at that level. But that's definitely a little bit of a pipe dream right now.
Mm-hmm. But that's something you want, though. Like, that's what you'd like to be doing?
I think it would be a phenomenal adventure and a very interesting experience to go through, which makes it a possibility for the future.
Well, all right then. So Michael, if anybody's enjoyed listening to you on the show or they're interested in finding out more about Eternal Extravaganza, how can they get a hold of you? Where can they find you?
The web address for Eternal Extravaganza is eemagic.com. Mm-hmm. Also, you can reach me by email at toacomics@gmail.com.
Okay. And the name of your game store is Tales of Adventure.
Correct.
And I want to give people the link to the blog, because like I said, there's a lot of good stuff here about starting your own store and some behind-the-scenes stuff. That is toacomics.com/blog, and you took pictures and you talked about everything from painting, shelving, mopping the floors, and I think this is a good resource for anybody who might be thinking of starting their own store. So thank you so much for coming on the show, Mike. It has been a pleasure getting to know you, and I look forward to meeting you at Eternal Extravaganza in 3 weeks.
Thanks for having me, Erin.
Absolutely. And if anybody's enjoyed listening to The Deck Tees, you can always find the show first and foremost on GatheringMagic.com. The show is on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe and leave me a review or some stars. You can keep up with the show on Twitter at The Deck Tees. You can keep up with me at Original Estrus. And you can email the show at TheDeckTees@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.